Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick. Let's go, hook him up!
I just whipped your ass.
You take it all away.
I'm gonna drag you until I wear your Texas ass out.
The game is ours to play.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Over the Top Radio. I am your host Ed in San Antonio, and I'm currently joined by my co-host Craig. What's going on, Craig?
Greetings and salutations, Edward. How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm doing fine, or a lot better than the last couple days. I've been a little under the weather, but I'm feeling better today. And we have
good,
our
good.
Other co-host on the line, Contreras. What's going on, Contreras?
Not much. What's going on with you?
Not much, just introducing the show. So we're back after a week off, and of course I'll just blame Craig for that. So
that's easy enough to do.
Yeah. I'm sure
I'll do the show last year. Do the show last Friday and it told me he didn't want to do it.
Yeah, well, something came up, I just wasn't able to do it. So I never had time to watch the stuff because I just had stuff come up. So it's like I can't really do a show if I haven't seen everything. But
I spent 3 hours watching World Class last Friday.
Yeah, well, there's nothing better than watching World Class. I mean, seriously, I mean, there's a lot of great shit on the network. But my favorite thing out of everything is the World Class stuff. And it's kind of cool that they're adding stuff. Unfortunately, they're subtracting stuff, which I don't understand because they got plenty of shit they can add to it. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just cool being able to see some of those shows. And
the one that they took off was the one with the six-man tag with the Freebird and Dave Von Erich won the titles. That kind of led into that Christmas show. I mean, you know, to that main event, so. That would have been good to see.
Yeah, I don't understand. That one wasn't up there very long. I don't understand why they did that.
I don't understand why they do what they do. They bounce. They don't even have, like, most of these shows are, like, doing them out of order. You know, they'll, like, skip a show. And
yeah,
it'd be, like, gaps in the schedule or in the lineup or something like that. So I don't understand why they do it like that. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, like the last, they actually kind of put four that were in a row all together, but then they took the six-man one off. And I think the first episode, like the earliest one, is episode 50, so they could go back almost a year before if they really wanted to. And hopefully that stuff will come out because there might be some stuff that I haven't even seen, you know, if they're at 50, you know, on those, because those were kind of the beginning. Like, when I started watching World Class, because I didn't start watching it right away, because I didn't actually discover it until my dad just took me to a World Class show here in town, and that was the very first time.
Mm-hmm.
But when I started watching it, David was in Florida. Kevin still had boots on for a little bit. And, you know, Bundy still had hair. You know, But that you could go back a long ways. Like if 50 episodes is almost a year. It's just short of a year. So I mean, like I say, I'm excited that hopefully they'll put those episodes 1, 2, and 3, 4 because I, you know, there might be stuff I've never actually seen, and I'm kind of excited about that.
Well, there's like kind of like two eras of like world class. There's before the Freebird showed up and after the Freebird showed up. So, you know.
Yeah, and a big difference, you know, between because they had an awesome top heel in Kabuki at the time, because you know Kabuki is an awesome gimmick, way ahead of its time, and you know he got some play in Georgia, but I guess Kabuki's biggest run to me is the world class, because like I said, he was the top heel, and then you had Bundy was also one of the top guys, and then you had like after that then you had like Wild Bill Urin and Frank Dusick and you know, a few other guys here and there. But when the Freebirds came in, you know, it was just a higher quality of talent, you know. I mean,
it kind of pointed out that main heel you were missing when they came in, because they didn't have that main heel before, you know.
And it was perfect because it was three of them, and then there was three Von Erichs. It was like the perfect you know, pros, you know, heroes and villains. I mean, it was just, honestly, it was almost like magic, everything that kind of happened those few years. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
It's something
and,
you can never
Craig,
repeat.
You know,
you could never repeat it today.
Yeah, yeah. And Craig, you know, I think basically the only real world class you've ever really seen is probably the documentaries.
Yeah,
so,
pretty much.
How many, did you just watch the two episodes or did you watch any more?
No, I just watched the two this week, and to be quite honest, it was pretty darn entertaining. I haven't, you know, growing up here, we didn't have that stuff, and it wasn't even, you know, we used to get like AWA every so often on ESPN and you know, UWF and stuff like that. So this is really, honestly, besides a couple of documentaries that I've seen, this is like the first world class that I've seen, to be completely honest.
Uh-huh. And these two episodes, I mean, basically the main one we're going to talk about basically just had the one match, and then the second one had a really long main event, but it did have three matches. But honestly, mm-hmm. they'd have four, maybe sometimes five. The cage match is actually a little different compared to the other shows. It was kind of filmed differently, but the next one is kind of like the way your typical wrestling show was built. And what did you just think of it as a like wrestling show from start to finish compared to like shows today?
Now, before I answer that, the question I had, it did look different, and I was wondering if NWA had, you know, filmed that, and that's why the footage was better, the Flair-Terry Cage match?
It was still Mickey Grant.
I think it was just, you know, it wasn't at the Sportatorium. So everyone's used to watching everything from the Sportatorium, and this was at the arena. So to me, it looked like they filmed it on a different kind of film. Like, it looked more like especially the crowd shots, it almost looked like documentary or like something like that, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. At the time, at least in the Sportatorium, they had the best production of any show at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it just looked like it wasn't like in one of those dingy studios, you know, like the TBS studio was just real small and, you know, same thing with Memphis, but this was, it wasn't too big, Sportatorium wasn't too big of a building, but it wasn't too small of one. It kind of just fit, like, kind of like a...
They were like, you know how people like, make the comment that TNA is really good about making a few people look like more? That's what the Sportatorium kind of looked like. There at times, you see camera angles that are a little out, that it looks like it's a really big place, way bigger than it is. And then... If you really look at it, if you could see more episodes from like earlier on, you would really see how the crowd, well, they had decent crowds, you know, a year later, there was no room. I mean, people were packed in there. And I remember there was this one little old man who was always front row, and he'd always stand up and start going crazy, screaming at the Freebirds or Gary Hart or, you know, everyone. And he's like, you always knew, he was like the early, like, hat guy or sign guy, you know what I mean? You knew who he was.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one time I was watching, I had a video that's kind of like a, it's kind of like the best of them on Earth, but a lot, it actually, if you watch it, it's kind of like the worst of them on Earth in some ways, and they show like a lot of footage.
Ringside?
I'm sorry, what?
Was it front row ringside?
No, it was an RF video.
Oh, it was?
And,
okay, I was just wondering. Can you remember that front row ringside that they put out, that World Class put
yeah.
out?
Oh yeah, I think I like messaged you guys that one, but this one was it was just like ROF put a compilation together, and then he took a lot of the funeral footage, and I'll never forget like the last thing they show of the Day of Unearthed funeral is like it's kind of like I guess you know they're on their way to the actual like cemetery or whatever, and then the last thing you kind of see is you see that little old man in tears, and it was just like real gut-wrenching for me when I saw it, because I saw this, like, years later, you know what I mean? And it was just like, wow, I mean, that just, like, it literally broke my heart, because I saw that old man, and it was like, I remembered exactly who he was, and I was like, oh, wow. But, the
I remember seeing
were,
some photos of the funeral, like, the Observer had some stuff in it, like, when he died and it came out at the time. I just thought it was interesting, you know, you get into this fake world of wrestling, but then you see Ric Flair showing up, Harley Race is showing up, Vern Gagne is showing up, you know.
Stu Hart and Bret Hart, you know, showed up.
Yeah.
I remember Bill Apter wrote an incredible thing in Pro Wrestling Illustrated or one of them, but it was like he was at the funeral and he talked about the funeral, and it was just like an awesome thing. But the fans were pretty crazy, and it's real funny looking back because, you know, that early 80s style, you know, the haircuts and the clothes, it's like, what the fuck? But they were a rowdy crowd, but somehow they were held back by this little string that went around the ring. And it's amazing that shit didn't really go down because, you know, in the cage match, there's a fan that literally tried to attack Terry Gordy that, like, two or three cops had to stop the dude, you know.
Well, my God,
and,
the match, the fans were all pressed up to every side of the cage, you know,
yeah.
At the beginning.
And then, when the Von Erichs would come out, any of the good guys would come out, the kids would circle the ring or that side and just get autographs. And then when the Von Erichs or Chris Adams or Iceman came out, they had, as you see it in the cage match, they had to literally, they basically were molested and raped on their way to the ring. And you can't tell me that the Von Erichs are the most envious wrestlers in the entire world at the time, because goddamn, those guys could have got any fucking pussy in the state of Texas that they wanted, man. It's crazy.
I just see on my notes here when I was watching the Flair Carey match, I just see the state of Bill Mercer's beard.
Oh, I had forgot about that shit. He had basically Bill Mercer, who was a longtime Von Erich play-by-play guy, and then followed by Mark Lorenz, who's also the ring guy. He had this beard, which was like white in the middle, like in his chin, but he had this beard, but he had no mustache. And you could tell he
could
have a thick-ass mustache if he wanted.
He looked like the
but it was just
Surgeon
like,
General of the United States. He looked like Surgeon General of the United States, what he looked like.
Right? Yeah, it was a trip, man.
Now, who was that, the guy on the previous episodes that I watched? Who was Jay Saldy? Was he a football player? Did he play for the Cowboys or something?
Yeah, he played for the Cowboys, because there's the one episode where Harvey Martin kind of, like, walks by, and then they call him up, and he kind of, like, you know, he's like my former teammate, and I remember him, but he wasn't around that much longer after I started watching. But I
do
remember
like
him.
He's moved on. I mean, getting to the Flair and Kerry stuff, like this Christmas night stuff, it seems like he's kind of, he's not there anymore, so.
One thing on the shows that he was on, or like a lot of, it was really weird because like they would talk about like Harley Race doing stuff in other places and Ric Flair and
Roddy Piper
in Georgia, and it's like, you know, it's taboo nowadays. You don't like, and for years you don't mention what the hell's going on, and you know, WD doesn't say what's going on at TNA or WCW, but they talked about all kinds of shit as far as the wrestling goes back then.
Frank Dusik had just got back from a tour of Japan with Hulk Hogan, who's in Rocky 2. I remember that one in that Frank Dusik match. So.
Yeah, I remember that.
I'm sorry, Craig. Go ahead. I know you've been trying to jump in.
Oh, I was just going to say it was kind of funny to see the format, how the studio was laid out and how there was a single announcer, and it reminded me a lot of Portland wrestling.
Yeah.
There was the hard camera, and that's pretty much it. I mean, there was other cameras in the building, but the hard camera is what they focused on the most, is kind of what I noticed. And then you got the announcer who was good. Getting back to his beard, a black beard, but then the outline of a white goatee.
It looks like he ran out of time shaving, getting ready for this show.
Right.
You know?
So it looks like his goatee is completely white, but he has a full-on black beard. And he was good. He reminded me a lot of the Portland guy. I can't even remember his name. But that sounds familiar. But the crowd was way more into it than the Portland crowd. I can't
like
even.
Like a concert crowd.
Yeah, it was the two matches the one match with the Flair and Kerry. I mean, obviously that's going to be a rabid crowd, but the one that they actually filmed from the sportatorium, mm-hmm. The crowd was just into everything. I was, and we'll get into it when we talk about the shows, but I was amazed how over Manny or Al Madrid was.
Al
Madrid. I was shocked. Yeah, I was.
He was a longtime guy in Portland. I think he was one of Buddy Wayne's cocaine buddies.
Anyway, we'll talk about that some other time off the air. But yeah, I was really blown away with it. And I just watched it yesterday and, thoroughly entertained.
About the day they're out there amusing themselves instead of cheering for people in the ring.
Yeah.
Before the fans. No JBL chance, no Jerry Lawler chance. No, seafood chance. You know, whatever the fuck they do today. I don't know.
And like the second episode, it's a little different because there's like three good matches as far as quality wise. But your typical world class show would have two jobber matches. And as far as everyone being over, the jobbers used to have the kids run up to them and, you know, would circle the ring to get autographs. I mean, not as much as the Von Erichs and everyone else, but these guys who were like the face jobbers, they would sign autographs too, so even they were over. And so you'd have like two squash matches, and then you'd have a semi-main event like a Brian Adidas, Buddy Roberts type match, or like Al Madrid, like Kabuki or something like that, and then you'd have a good main event. I remember there was like a handcuff match between Terry Gordy and David Von Erich. I mean, Jimmy Garvin, when he first came in, wrestled David Von Erich, and David actually put him over clean. Well, kind of. There was confusion because he used the Brainbuster, and the Brainbuster might have been illegal, but they weren't sure. But it was always a good, you know what I mean? It wasn't Georgia where it was all jobber matches, you know, and it wasn't like today where it was all good matches, but it was a good mix because you got to showcase complaint. You know, when Kamala came in, he killed like three jobbers, you know. And then the next thing you know, he wrestled Jose Lothario. And people are like, okay, Jose's going to give him a fight. But then he went and he squashed like Jose, you know, and he kind of worked his way up to like the, you know, he got to showcase how much of a monster he was before he got to the Von Erichs. You know, so that's one thing that was good about World Class. You got to build, you know, they when they brought someone in, they got to build themselves after a few weeks and, you know, really get over. And we're talking about the production. They did a lot from that hard camera, and they had, like, the perfect angle because, like I said, the hard camera made the crowd look bigger than it was or the building look bigger than it was. But then they had, like, two cameramen, and they had these, like, big, bulky cameras with these big-ass cords, but the one black dude, that dude could get inside and out of the ring like nothing. I mean, that one thing about World Class is they put someone in, like, a Boston Crab. They dude get in the ring and get right in the dude's face, you know, and it was awesome. It's like, it looked a little weird, I'm sure, if you saw it live, but seeing it on TV, it was just like, you know, it was just like you were that much closer than all the other wrestling shows.
There were no holes in the cage where you could fit Christy Hemme through. that's about the damn stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life. I've seen that on fucking show the other night.
That's way
she
up there.
She threw the woman through the hole in the cage.
Yes, and by the way, ripped her pants, and she got 6 stitches in her upper thigh.
I'm not surprised. I mean, poor thing, scraping up against the damn little hole.
I'm not sure why Brian didn't report that, but he got a text message from somebody saying as much from the show the other night.
It is as stupid as you know that. When you know what they had in, like, the Hell in the Cell, they had the gaps in the cage where you could climb it.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just kind of looks silly.
Yeah, but those weren't as bad as – I didn't actually see the show, but, it, I mean, if it was big enough for Christy to be pulled in, and, yeah, Christy's not that big, but still, you know what I mean? There's a big difference from a hole for your foot and then a hole for Christy Hemme, you know? And then it was all cage matches, and what match did they do the fucking – slammed the cage door. Wasn't it like the first match, second match? And the guy kept on fighting after that?
I'm trying to remember what they did the slam. It might have been the main event. I'm not sure. I don't remember. I can't remember good stuff.
Yeah. But going back to, like, basically what led up to this cage match is like I say, you know, the top heels had been King Kong Bundy and Kabuki. And just before this, the Freebirds were in Georgia, and they were actually feuding with each other. Buddy Roberts wasn't really too much around, but basically Terry Gordy was win heel, and Hayes was the face. And I just remember, I don't remember who was actually in the match, but there's a cage match, and the heels are beating up Hayes, and they're trying to get Gordy to, you know, help them beat up Hayes, but they're beating them up so bad, Terry Gordy just kind of, like, turns back and helps his partner, and then the Freebirds are, like, reunited. And then they
same thing that happened, like, what was it, like, 6 years later in, like, 1988 in that Triple Dome of Terror match?
Yeah.
And that pretty much the same thing that happened?
Pretty much.
I think Gordy was in with Jimmy Snuka, right?
Yeah. I'm sorry, what?
Gordy was teaming with Jimmy Snuka.
Yeah, he was teaming with Snuka for a while.
Michael Hayes was teaming with Otis Sistrunk. I just remember that name.
Was that a black guy?
I don't remember. I never seen the guy, but I just remember that goofy name.
Yeah, I remember, and I can't read, because it was so long ago, I remember one of the Freebirds had, like, a black partner or something. I don't know about, it was just, I thought Snuka was black at the time, because that was the first time I'd seen him, or if, you know, Hayes had a partner that was black. But anyway, that was kind of, you know, they had the thing they would face. And then a little while later, basically what happened is Gary Hart invited Michael Hayes to come check out World Class and booked him for 2 dates. He booked him for San Antonio first, and then he booked him for Dallas or Fort Worth. So, and I was at the show where he showed up for the first time. So he basically came out. I don't think he actually wrestled. He just basically cut a promo saying that, hey, you know, we're here, and I'm going to bring my brothers, and they were, you know, of course they were favorites in Georgia, so of course they were fan favorites and stuff. And then he, you know, he he kind of liked everything, so he decided to stay. And then, like, shortly after, Gordy came in, and they were baby faces, you know. It's funny, though, because Hayes is coming in, and he's doing his, like, ultra kind of douchey, like you know the way he carried himself, like he was a sex,
yeah,
you know, a sex symbol, and but kind of a douchebag. But he was smiling, and people were, and the fans were cheering him so out of place because it's so different than the Von Erichs. It's like you almost knew at some point the people are going to turn on him because he's just too goddamn cocky. You know what I mean? And then he brought in Terry, and they were you know, faces for a while. And then at that Christmas show, they had a six-man match, and they didn't have titles. They had a fucking six-foot trophy, basically, is what the six-man titles were.
Yeah, I never liked when they had the trophies. I always liked it. I like belts better than trophies.
I don't know. I kind of like trophies. But basically, they had the match. You know, there was only two Freebirds because Buddy hadn't come in yet. It was Hayes and Gordy, and then David Von Erich, and then they wrestled the team of, I just remember Iron Mike Sharp was in it, and I remember Sharp from WWE, and I forgot who the other guys were. I don't know, they were like all Sharp brothers.
Tommy Sharp and Tommy Sharp. I don't know if they were brothers, so I'm not sure about that, but who's the other guy in there?
I can't remember.
Wild Bill or something? I don't know.
I think it was
on. I'll have to look this up right now.
I'd have to go wait until they put that episode back and watch it again. But basically, this was like earlier in the crowd, and they won. You know, they ended up winning, and they celebrated together. Dave Von Erich, you know, slapping hands and high fives and hugging the Freebirds. Like, it's a total love fest. And then, you know,
Mike and Ben Sharp and Tom Steele.
I don't even remember Tom Steele, to be honest with you. But basically, like, the main event was going to be a cage match between Kerry and Ric Flair. And you can go back quite a ways because, like, you remember when Harley Race put the bounty on Ric Flair?
Yeah, in 83.
They basically... They kind of did that angle for Flair put a bounty on Kerry because Kerry was having all these matches with Rick, and Rick was having to always get disqualified or something. So Kabuki supposedly injured Kerry's knee with some, like, Asian spinning toe hold thing. I guess Kerry had to have, like, surgery for a while.
Well,
so they
it's not an Asian move unless you put the word Asian in front of it, you know?
Yeah.
Always notice that. The Asian arm drag, the Asian backdrop, you know?
Well, that's basically, it was like the Asian-Indian toehold. But, so, like, Harry was out for a while, and then they did that. And then they had this one awesome 2 out of 3 match that was, it's one of their best ones. And basically, it's an NWA referee because it's a title match, and they had to bring in the special NWA referee. And basically, I think Harry gets disqualified the first one. Wins the second fall, and then the third fall is a double disqualification. So even though Kerry was the only guy who got a real fall, the title still didn't change hands. And, you know, it was always some kind of controversy, you know, surrounding their matches. So basically they're going to put them in a cage so they can, you know, have no interference, and then make sure nothing really happens. You got to vote for a special enforcer referee, which was Michael Hayes was one of them, and I can't even recall who the other people were at the time. And basically, of course, Michael Hayes won. So he goes in there, and if you ever listen to Mick Foley talk about, like, when he turned heel, he always talks about he took Michael Hayes' advice, and the heel, to really make it work, the heel has to believe that he is right. And they did that so perfect in this match because Hayes is calling it down the middle. He's pushing and pulling off Ric Flair. He's pulling off and pushing Kerry Von Erich. You know, he's being over-aggressive, but he's doing it both ways, you know. So in his mind, basically, yeah. So basically what happens, they're having this match, and it was a really good match. But basically what basically happens is, you know, Flair's getting involved, and he's getting more aggressive. And basically, Kerry has Flair in the claw hold, and Flair like swings his leg towards the ropes, and he touched the rope, but then it didn't land on the rope. It was just kind of like there.
He barely grazed the rope, and Michael Hayes saw it.
Yeah, so he basically pulls Kerry off. Kerry's kind of like, what the fuck's going on? Start arguing. Kerry Gordy's like, you know, has been getting aggravated too because, you know, Hayes is getting all involved. So he's like, you know, fuck this, come on. So basically, there's kind of like a smudge going on, and then Flair tries to like get back involved, and Hayes ends up, he punches Flair, and he's telling Kerry to cover. Kerry's kind of a little drowsy or groggy or whatever, but he's not covering. Hayes throws him on top. Kerry like gets off because that's not the right thing to do. He's like, no, you hit him, and stuff. So then Michael Hayes gets mad. They kind of argue. Flair knees Kerry from the back. Kerry goes into Flair. Kerry goes into Hayes. Hayes kind of...
Yeah, he's trying to leave because he just fit up with the whole situation.
Yeah.
He's trying to leave the cage.
Yeah, so Flair hits Kerry. Kerry hits Hayes. Hayes goes out. Kerry's kind of like right there. And if you really, really look at it, it sounded so awesome because you hear the pang because the handle... It's a bar, but it really didn't. It didn't kill Kerry. It just sounded like it killed Kerry. But Kerry sold it like it. You know, he was fucking brain dead after that.
They had a good camera angle where it didn't expose. You know, that it.
Yeah.
It didn't really hit him. You know. So.
Yeah. Kevin kind of blew it when he tried to slam the door and the door didn't touch the bar. You know what I mean? At the end when he came in. But basically, then Hayes went, and he Flair tried to cover Kerry, so Michael Hayes makes a three count, even though Kerry's shoulders weren't on the mat.
He wasn't on the mat. He was laying on his stomach.
I know. Yeah, so there's some confusion, and then they're like, they finally say that, no, it's not like the pin. And so they keep going. Flair's taking advantage because Kerry's just like, he's just selling that he's concussed. But he keeps on fighting, and he actually even has the advantage, but he, like, hit the discus punch, but then he goes down, and he's just, like, real groggy. He can't make the cover, and David Manning's looking at him. He's like, no, we can't continue the match. He stops the match. Flair ends up winning because Kerry can't continue. And, basically that's what happened.
He didn't look at that off when he stopped the match. That's just one thing about the finish. He just kind of stopped the match. He really didn't look bad off to where it needs to be stopped.
Yeah, but I thought it kind of worked because it kept Kerry strong because he still had the last move even though he was unable to compete. So you kept him strong as the hero, you know. And Flair's never had a problem about stuff like that. But the match itself was great. I mean, it's Kerry Von Erich is just it's amazing how much of an athlete he was for as big as he was. Because he throws like a Randy Orton standing drop kick right to Ric Flair's face. I mean, it was a beautiful drop kick. I mean, it just brought back so much memories watching him. What did you actually think of the actual match and the wrestling part of it, Craig?
Very good. I mean, I think Ric Flair said it best. He could have a match with a broomstick and it would look good. Excuse me. I did notice that Kerry Von Erich appeared to have been perhaps medicated in some way, shape, or form.
He always had glassed over eyes for the most part.
Well, that happens a lot when you smoke weed. But anyway, his stuff looked, everything looked good for the most part. Some of Kerry's offense was a suspect at best. I don't know why a man would climb to the top rope in the center of the ring. I thought that
especially
odd.
On those ropes. Those were like the loosest ropes ever.
It's like he stood on the top rope and it sunk all the way down to the second rope. So, anyway. But, the match was phenomenal. Of course, Flair gigged and hit a gusher and just bleeding like crazy. And, The thing that really stuck out to me is the fans. I mean, there was kind of early in the match, Kerry had put on the claw, and the place came unhinged, like they were expecting it to end right now, even though
later on, the same thing happened when he put him in the abdominal stretch.
Yes. Yeah, they just came unglued. Michael Hayes, and I'll talk a little bit more about this when we review the next episode. But Michael Hayes is so phenomenal.
Yes.
I can't. When he's in the ring, it's almost like I couldn't not watch him move. Just everything he did, it meant so much because he was. Obviously, he was even better than the referee in the match. I mean, at one point, towards the end, the ref got punched or shoved, and he didn't even, like, sell it. He, like, fired back like he was going to, going to punch the heel. It's like, no. This is not the time for that. You know, take a bump, kid. But the match was great, and they're really – wasn't the storytelling was good enough to where you didn't need a million moves. I'll tell you what, nobody did a head scissors. Nobody dove off the top of the cage. Nobody threw thumbtacks in the middle of the ring and then pile drove somebody.
And then kicked out.
It was nobody went through a
table. The only thing that you could even consider a high spot was when he climbed up those ropes the way he did and jumped off.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I mean, it was a lot of brawling. It was it wasn't technical by any stretch of the imagination, but I was absolutely intrigued and completely entertained. And of course, when Michael Hayes and Terry Gordy, you know, when they finally when the schmoz was up and Terry throws the door into Kerry's face, the crowd went ballistic, and as Michael Hayes is getting out of the cage, as you stated, and I told you about this on Facebook, there is a man wearing a one of those shiny jackets with his hair parted down the middle and feathered on both sides. He runs up to the cage, and three cops have to, like, push him back because he is so upset with Michael Hayes. I would imagine that this is the guy from the Jim Cornette interview where he's yelling and sobbing, "It's still real to me."
this guy was tall. He was a big – well, he didn't have a lot of weight, but he was a tall dude.
And the cops had to push him back, and he was pointing fingers and yelling and screaming and losing his mind. And I was like, you got him. That's when you know you got him. If you can make a guy hate you that much, that's when you as a wrestler know you got him. And I only got that a couple times in my life. And it was so awesome. And then
I was watching this, and one of my notes says, Kerry Von Erich is a very good-looking, ugly man.
There's a lot of truth to that.
Ugly dude I've ever seen in my life.
Well, it's because he had that, like, glazed look to his eyes sometimes. The thing with Kerry is, like, if let's say God came to you and said, all right, Craig or Ed or Contreras, you could have any physique of any man ever, I would say Kerry Von Erich, because Kerry Von Erich, he wasn't as cut as, like, let's say, a Rick Rude or a Lex Luger, but he had these giant chests and giant shoulders and arms and these giant thighs, and he might not have been as, like, athletic as Doug Furness, but he was,
right.
He could, I don't know, to me, he had so much more, like he said, Kerry Von Erich had this incredible amount of charisma that he did not know he had. It's like he had it, but he didn't know it. And he could move for his size like no other jacked up guy, you know, Lex Luger could never do anything like Kerry Von Erich as far as his, you know, like physical, like drop kicks, leapfrogs. I mean, Kerry was an incredible fucking athlete, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get
if Kerry Von Erich wasn't had been on drugs, Kerry Von Erich would have been, I don't know, he would have been right there with Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, he was obviously a good athlete. It's kind of, you know, kind of think about it now because I've made fun of it in the past, you know, better than losing a foot, but it's like incredible he was able to come back to the level he did after losing his foot, you know, and wrestle for so many years.
Yeah. He wasn't as good, but like he could still do them. He could still throw drop kicks. I mean, you'd really have to like until you actually knew that he didn't have a foot, you didn't notice that his foot never moved, that it stayed straight. It's like I never noticed that when I was a kid.
I always noticed that moved after the accident. It looked like a brace. It was so
ridiculous. Well, I always figured it was just like a brace, but I always figured it was like, you know, I had no clue that he didn't have a foot. I mean, you just figure he's, you know, recovering, but it's like, it's amazing. And unfortunately, I mean, he already had a drug problem, but then when you're wrestling on one foot, and I'm sure there wasn't a lot of support, I'm sure the dude was in agony after every match. You know, and, you know, that's an excuse for him to get more on drugs than he already was. But, you know, it didn't help, unfortunately. And unfortunately, they didn't have the guidance. You know what I mean? I mean, it just that they just left the life in Texas, and it was a hell of a life. And, you know,
they
unfortunately,
had no consequences to what their actions.
Yeah,
what they did.
Yeah, because they got away with everything for years because Fritz had power in Dallas. I mean, he really did. He put the kibosh. Kerry got busted here in San Antonio at the airport with a bunch of pills. And, you know, you heard about it that first night, but then after that, Fritz put the kibosh on it. You never heard about it again. And, you know, but, I mean.
More different than, like, a southern, you know, like, in a small town, the star football player keeps getting into trouble, but daddy keeps doing something about it. You know, so you can play football.
Yeah. And, but I mean, Kerry, I mean, like, I think Michael Hayes on one of the videos says that Kerry Von Erich, the guy who you might not know who he is, but you see him for 1 second and you just see a star. And that's exactly how, like, you know, the first time I saw a Kerry, you know, I talked about the first show my dad took me to, you know, well, he tricked me to go ask to try and buy him a beer, and I had everyone laughing at me because I'm fucking 12 years old trying to buy a beer at the concession stand. But, you know, I just remember I'm walking back to my seat crying because I couldn't buy my dad a beer, and everyone was laughing at me, and I see a sign that says, Kerry beat Kabuki, and I didn't know Kerry, but I knew Kabuki, and I just remember running back to my dad yelling, Dad, Kabuki, Kabuki! And then Kabuki came out with Kerry Hart, and then Kerry Von Erich came out, and then, like, just as soon as he got in the ring, I was just like, wow, that I want to be that dude. I want to grow up to be that dude. You know what I mean? And
first time I ever saw him live, he and Kevin were in the ring yelling about having to wrestle faggots. That's what it was. They were wrestling. Remember Beauty and the Beast, that tag team from, like, the late days?
The World Tony Folk is one of them, right?
Who?
Tony Folk?
No, this was like Terrence Garvin, who looked like Jimmy Garvin.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
and some other guy. And this was in Vicksburg, my hometown. And he said, we all know what everybody in Vicksburg, Mississippi, Hayden is a fucking faggot.
Hmm.
Said, okay.
Yeah, you can get away with shit like that back then.
Yeah.
I always give you a hard time for being in love with Kerry Von Erich. Maybe love's a strong word. But, you know, I get it. I get it. When I was a kid, for me, it was Hulk Hogan. And, you know, just completely larger than life. And, just, it's like, wow, how do you command that much attention? I mean, he just had people eating out of the palm of his hand. And
he didn't know it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unlike
so,
Hulk Hogan,
yeah,
he didn't know it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I get it. And I understand. But, yeah, it was, I really enjoyed the match. And I'll probably watch some more. You know?
Yeah. And I was about to say, Kerry Von Erich also had some of the greatest robes in the history of pro wrestling. All the Von Erichs really, but Kerry mainly. I mean, he always had these. Whoever was making the robes for him was earning their money because they made some awesome robes. And then he also, you know, he kind of had that long hair, and him and David, not so much Kevin because Kevin had shorter hair, but David and Kerry were all so fucking. Do you remember, like, you go to the rodeo or the fair, and you'd get to win these roach clips with these fancy feathers on them? But they were actually roach clips. They would come to the ring wearing roach clips with these feathers on them, and so it looked, like, so cool, you know, at that time, in that era. It's so funny knowing now that they were fucking wearing fucking drug paraphernalia to the ring. Excuse me. But I guess we can start talking about the second show.
Yeah.
Which is like right after, a little bit after the Christmas show, and this is where they finally brought in Buddy Roberts. And I forgot, like, you made the comment on Facebook Couture about how young he looked, and
that was me.
I went back and watched it, and I was actually amazed how young he looked because, you know, the last thing you remember is like, when he was with the Samoan SWAT team, you know, you kind of remember that Buddy Roberts, but he was still older than the other two. But yeah, he was like, I couldn't believe how young he looked, honestly.
Yeah,
I got him. I noted when I was watching this match. It just says, how young Buddy looks in 1983. It's clear between 1983 and 1990, he aged about 100 years.
Now, I think the last time I saw him on one of the round tables, he had the trach in.
Yeah.
I think
was he on a round table? I don't remember him being on a round table.
No, I think he's talking about the Von Erich video.
Oh, yeah, the Von Erich video.
I'm pretty sure it was on a round table, but I could be completely wrong. I did have Couture go ahead and do, like, Vinny's job and write down the matches and who beat who. So if you want to do that, Couture, that'd be probably a good thing.
Yeah, the first match was Brian Adidas versus Buddy Roberts. This was before he changed his name to Brian Adidas because I guess the shoe company got upset, which I don't know why they get upset.
I don't
know. I was looking on the World Class section here on the network, and they had the very next episode after this one we're reviewing is up now. So it has Kevin Von Erich against King Kong Bundy. Bill Murray sits down for a special interview with Kerry Von Erich. Brian Adidas takes on Terry Gordy. Highlights of the Flair Von Erich steel cage match. And King Kong Bundy faces the Samoan in the main event. You know who the Samoan was, Ed?
I have to actually watch it, but it might have been...
Shamu.
Shamu, wow.
Yeah.
Damn, he's been around forever then.
Yeah.
But going back to Brian Adidas, like his like storyline was he was Kerry Von Erich's childhood best friend, you know, high school best friend, and he was all right. He was like decent, like upper mid carder for World Class. You know, he'd have good matches and stuff. But he was also, I guess a lot of people don't know this, but he was also pretty much the drug dealer for the company, and. I guess that might have been why him and Kerry were so close, but he was pretty decent. And, you know, him and Buddy had a good one. Buddy was that flashy. He wasn't, like, spectacular. But he was probably, you know, in as awesome as Terry Gordy was, Buddy was probably the best worker at that time of the three.
Work-wise, I would have to agree with that. Work-wise, but then when you got Michael Hayes in there, How do you look at anybody else? I mean, Gordy was awesome. Don't get me wrong. He was an awesome, awesome big man.
They had the perfect dynamic. You had this flamboyant rock star lead man who's just charismatic as hell and the biggest douchebag in the world. And then you had the kind of quiet, but just a badass motherfucker in Terry Gordy. Just a, you know, people were scared of Terry Gordy. And then you had the guy who was just like, kind of like on Christmas Story, you had the bully and his little friend. You know, that was Buddy Roberts. He was the little instigator, and he'd be the one to get his ass kicked pretty much throughout the matches, and he's the one that kept Hayes and Gordy strong because he was the one that always pretty much did the jobs for the most part. But
he was a big guy, but he didn't do his brothers. It was one of those things where he knew that Michael and Buddy were weird, but they were his brothers, so it was okay.
I would relate him to like a Tully Blanchard type, almost, if in a stable.
Who's that, Buddy Roberts?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he had like no redeeming qualities to like. He was just kind of like a creepy looking dude.
He wasn't the enforcer. He wasn't the rock star. He was the other guy.
He was a mousy little friend that they always had to back up the shit he started, you know, or the trouble he got into.
Right. If they were a band, he would be the bass player.
I think he played bass on one of the on the Boys Are Back in Town video.
Enough said.
Terry Von Erich had one of the best things. He came out to Tom Sawyer, by Rush.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though it's not in the music stuff, but the other was
modern day way.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kerry had Tom Sawyer, which was awesome. Kevin had Stranglehold, which was awesome. And then David had LaGrange, which was awesome. The Iceman had We Are Family, which was awesome. And then, of course, you had Pat Street and Freebird. And then there's like that one six-man we watched that one time where they came out to fucking Willie Nelson singing Georgia on like the 4th of July. Buddy Roberts, my mom used to hate Buddy Roberts. My mom used to just get angry when Buddy Roberts was on. I hate him. He's stupid. She would go crazy. And I remember this, like, he'd always do, like, stuff where he'd be outside the ring and somehow he'd accidentally get knocked on his ass. And, I remember one time, you know, Michael Hayes would do the moonwalk. And, you know, he'd always do that. And one time he tried to get Buddy to do the moonwalk. So Buddy tries it and he falls on his ass. And I never heard my mom laugh so much. And, ha ha, look at that dumbass. And it was just entertaining just listening to my mom go crazy because of her hatred for Buddy Roberts.
And apparently the creepiness was not an act for his character. Because I think he was kind of weird in real life, too.
He was a slob. He was like real dirty.
He would just show up with his gear in like a paper sack. And somebody said it looked like he'd just gotten some hamburger from McDonald's because you'd see the grease spot on the paper bag or something like that.
Yeah, that, and then like when they put that fucking dead possum in his bag, he actually kept his gear in there and took it out and put it on after it had been in there for days. You know what I mean? I mean, he's just,
That's
a dirty dude.
You got no backup gear because you wear the same shit all the time.
Yeah. And then I guess you can go on to the next match.
Was a time limit draw. So.
Yes. Which you don't see anymore. And there's nothing wrong with that, by the way.
You get a lot of those back in the day.
Yeah, I know. And it's something that it's a finish that is so unused. I wish they would use it more because they don't even announce a time limit anymore on a lot of stuff. And it's a perfectly acceptable thing where two guys are just as good as each other and not one of them could finish the other guy. It's better than a distraction finish. It's better than a run-in. It's better than a DQ. It's just, okay, we're good.
And it's also they would give the time limit draws where you could see a great match, but nobody would have to lose.
Yeah. You know, like on TV.
Yeah,
they really didn't job a lot of people out on TV like that.
Yeah, like nowadays you'll have, let's say you'll have Kofi against The Miz, and you'll have Kofi win on Raw, and then the next SmackDown, The Miz gets his win back. They try and keep it even, but then no one gets over because they're both losing. This way, you have two guys wrestle. No one loses. They both kind of still look strong. I mean, it was just like, you know, a total opposite of what they do today, really.
Plus, well, time limits, like, if it was today in WWE, really wouldn't seem like it fit because of the way they promote their product.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit too sportsy, too sports-oriented, the time limit draws, I think. And they go for more of the entertainment thing.
I vote for more of going Broadway. So, more Broadways. They should do them.
I love the one where they go Broadway like at 60 minutes and then there's a fall in like 56 minutes. Like in Slayer and Steamboat or something. I think that's awesome. Because back in the 80s, you were conditioned to, when it gets down to about 5 minutes left and the announcer announces it, you got conditioned to, you know, especially on time limit draw. So.
Mm-hmm. Right, go on.
I think the only time that WWE has ever done time limit draws is like in tournaments.
Sure.
You know, to like King of the Ring, like to eliminate two people.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. All right, next one.
Al Madrill against Michael Hayes.
Yes.
I got Bill Mercer calls a pile driver an atomic drop and atomic drop a pile driver.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Isn't that for years?
Yeah.
Oops. And I think he did it on a few other occasions. Somebody do a suplex. Oh, there's an atomic drop. There's a body slam. There's an atomic drop.
Yeah.
Bill Mercer wasn't Gordon Soley as far as calling moves, but, and like, you'll hear, like, I think even Dave will say he was a bad announcer. But he was perfect for world class because you have the Von Erichs who were, like, portrayed as these good Christians. And he was just, like, the perfect announcer for that. You know what I mean? You know, he really put him over. And then, like, he was awesome in the skit. Like, he's awesome in the Jimmy Garvin Precious skit when he goes to Precious S as a door. You know what I mean? Or Contreras' favorite thing when Bugsy McGraw puts him down the water slide. Or when he goes duck hunting with Von Erichs.
I watched the duck hunting one the other day. The duck hunting one is up on the schedule. Anybody can go watch that. He goes duck hunting with Von Erichs. This is like in 1983 or something. And Kevin said he likes it out here in the woods. He's not into the disco of the city, the disco and city life. I didn't know they were still doing disco in 83, by the way.
That's one thing about World Class. World Class was like the first territory to really do these vignettes or skits outside. You know, of course, the famous ones, the Slave for a Day with David Von Erich, Jimmy Garvin, but you had the duck cutting. You had just other things. You know, you got to see them outside of wrestling. You got to, like, know them as, like, they would be portrayed as, you know, the good Christians that did no wrong. And then, you know, then there's that real awesome one where they go to the, like, the bar and the Freebirds are eating. And, sick Mercer with the bill. Yeah, I mean, that shit was just great. But, yeah, the next match, Michael Hayes, Al Madrill. Al Madrill was always, like, kind of like he was, like, you know, a step below the Von Erichs, but he was, like, a high mid-carder. And he'd have I remember when I first started watching, he was feuding with Wild Bill Orton, and they actually would have really good matches. And I did hate his boots. He had these boots.
I hated his hair.
He had these boots that had these, like, circles that were open on the sides. So he would wear these, like, bright-ass, ugly-ass red or green socks to match his trunks that you would see through the, like, those where those holes were. And I just didn't like his boots. But he was pretty good. I mean, he was pretty good. And they did the basically. He didn't do as much as he would normally do in this match because they really put Hayes over. Hayes just kicking his ass for the most part. And then basically they do the thing where he covers him and then pulls him up after he already kind of has him beat. And then he's still winning, and then Jose Lothario hits the ring and interferes and goes after Hayes, and then wants, you know, a piece of Hayes.
Yeah, the finish is kind of like the finish in that cage match. It didn't look like he was getting beat up that bad to where he needed help, to where Lothario needed to hit the ring or something like that.
Yeah.
And I've had my notes here. It says, I'm pretty sure Jose Lothario was born a 75-year-old man. He looked 100 years old in 1983, as opposed to 200 years old. He looked in 1986 when he was with Shawn Michaels. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's always looked old. And
he had some fire though for an old man.
Oh yeah. Yeah, totally.
And he was like for years he was the guy. He kind of like was Pat Patterson was a little bit in WWE in that era where they had a good run. They were winding down. They'd still win matches against, like, lower competition, but they were always the ones that put over, you know, the guys, the new people coming in. And that, like I say, when Kamala squashed him and everyone thought he was going to put up a fight, but he got squashed. And, you know, he wasn't around too much longer after that, you know, but he was okay. You know, Michael Hayes is just like, That was his, to me, that was his peak, was like 83, 84, 85.
The bit where they play, where they're at his house playing pool.
Oh, my gosh. I have so much to say about this.
Well, go ahead.
Okay. So they're in what looks like somebody's den. And there's big bookshelves on the wall. And there is a Georgia Confederate flag. Taped from hung from one bookshelf to the other. Now, I didn't buy this for a minute because I didn't see Michael Hayes ever picking up a book in this time. And these shelves were absolutely loaded with books. So if you had told me that this was Michael Hayes' house, I would have said, BS, look at all the books. There's no way that man can read or has time to. And
maybe the surgeon said in case the pool table whizzed out and gets lopsided.
Yeah. So there's a pool table that is way too big for the room. You have Terry Gordy in a flannel shirt, unbuttoned, and cowboy hat. By the way, this is all inside. You have Buddy Roberts walking around with no shirt. And then you have Michael Hayes, who is wearing the ugliest silky Letterman's jacket you've ever seen in his life. And this scene,
basically, we realized something gay was going on.
And there must have been music playing in the background because WWE tried to cover it up with some generic honky-tonk music. I bet you Skinnerd was on the radio at one time. They commenced to cut in promos, and I was grinning ear to ear at this scene. This was phenomenal.
Yeah, they were great when they did that, like that one, and then the one where they're at like the abandoned house where Gordy busts through the window.
Yeah.
Is awesome. And then there's one where like they're in like a car or something, like it was around from one of the first ones with Buddy. That was awesome.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around the mentality of a man that plays pool shirtless with other men. This has never happened to me. In my 41 years on this earth, nobody has ever said, let's play pool and take our shirts off.
I need to go if I can make out some of the names of these books that were in this room because I didn't pay that too much attention.
This is tremendous.
That would almost be like if you, Brian, and Vinny were playing pool and Vinny decided to go shirtless.
Almost the same physique, I would imagine. Oh, this was gold. I loved this.
That's one of the greatest things about World Class. It's just they did so much shit outside of the ring was awesome. And It was like almost like unintentionally funny, like a lot of it. You know, it's not like the WWE where they're trying to be funny and it's not funny.
Right.
You know, it was like they're serious, but at the same time, it's funny.
Yeah. Funny stuff is when you don't try.
Yeah.
It just happens.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, go on, Katrina.
Oh, let's see. I guess we had the main event next.
Yeah.
We had Andre the Giant promo with Dave Manning explaining the rules to this match, which I'm still confused on. I think it's a six-man tag, but apparently it was just like single elimination kind of battle royal.
Yeah, basically it was a battle royal, but you could still win by pinfall or submission. And basically you had three baby faces and three heels. You had Wild Bill Orton, the Goon, for people who don't know who Wild Bill Orton is. He's the
Chauncey.
Goon in WWE who dressed like a hockey player and his boots look like skis. And then you had King Kong Bundy, who was still young.
It's Bundy, it's not Bundy.
Yeah, it's Bundy.
Whatever. King Kong.
We try to be sophisticated.
Yeah, well, this is when he was moving at his best.
I'll give you that.
You had Terry Gordy, who was just like, this is right after, like, you know, the cage match. And then you had Andre the Giant, who, this is a time where Andre went everywhere. He went to every territory. He was already getting fat, but he could still, I mean, when he was immobile in that Hogan match, Andre knew what to do. You know what I mean? He knew how to work, even though he could barely move. And at this time, he's fat, but he could still move. And a little bit, not like, you know, a few years earlier. But you had Andre, who was like one of the most famous wrestlers. And he probably was the most, because this is before Hogan took off. So he's probably the most famous wrestler known worldwide. And then you had Kerry Von Erich. And basically, like, the match starts, and Kerry attacks Terry Gordy, like, right away, and before the bell even starts, and Bugsy McGraw is trying to break it up. Oh, whatever. So, basically, Kerry, well, I'll let Couture run it down, basically, the match.
Kerry goes, was it Michael Hayes that interfered from the outside, and he got eliminated? I believe so.
Yeah, he just touched him, and Terry Gordy, like, eliminated him.
Yeah, Terry Gordy. Now I got to ask this question. If this had taken place after his motorcycle wreck, would he have to be eliminated twice to be eliminated?
That's not funny.
Both feet got to hit the floor. He only had one.
Well, he had two at this time, so it doesn't matter.
It was a fake foot.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm sorry. But, yeah, that was kind of neat, though. He's like, he's the very first one to go out, so, and you got fucked by the Freebirds again. So
it was a teaser, because it was intense for the few minutes he was in there, but you know, it was just a tease of, you know, matches to come, and you know, and it was a, you know, they got the distraction, so it's not like Kerry got thrown out like a job or anything. So Kerry goes out, so that leaves you know, Bugsy and Andre, and then Bugsy McGraw, basically, his gimmick was he was like Curly Joe of the Three Stooges.
I swear he did the Curly Shuffle during this match a couple times.
He'd always do that. Hey, remember how Kabuki would spin around?
Yeah.
Well, Bugsy McGraw would spin around just like Kabuki, and that was actually pretty awesome, too.
He always came out to Joy to the World. I remember correctly. It was his theme music. And he wore goggles and an old
not
pilot.
The Christmas song.
Joy to the World, all the boys and girls now?
Yeah, not the Christmas song, Joy to the World.
Oh,
the other one. Okay.
He was like he's like a poor man's Jimmy Valiant, if you can imagine that.
Wow. The Jimmy Valiant was almost homeless.
Well, there were three of them. They were all kind of different, but they were all the same. Jimmy Valiant, Bugsy McGraw, and Rufus R. Jones.
Oh, God, Rufusaur Jones.
They were just like, they were like older guys past their prime who have become comedy guys. And Layman McGraw is pretty funny. I mean, I always enjoyed
but
that.
Hey,
I don't
like,
know how the
Jimmy
fuck
Valiant
he
was
won one review.
Jimmy Valiant was at least over like a motherfucker when he was doing that stuff. You know, I can't say nothing bad about Buzzy wasn't as over
was,
as Jimmy was.
Yeah, he wasn't over as much as Jimmy, but he was still pretty over. And it looked like a lot of times he looked like he was wearing slippers when he wrestled. Like in that one Starcade, I think 83, he's like wearing slippers. But then, you know, they get rid of Bugsy, and it comes down to basically Andre against the three heels, and Andre just decides that he's going to choke Terry Gordy for like half an hour.
I've never seen Andre lay on the mat for so long before in a match in my life.
Yeah.
It was like
it's
a
funny cause he,
man.
He's choking Terry Gordy, and while Will Irwin's jumping off the top rope, and basically like a fly, you know? Maybe like
remember,
he might have kind of stunned Andre, but.
Remember hearing the story later on in the WWF where he held like a Big John Studd in like a chin lock and he fell asleep? I thought he was falling asleep in this match too. No.
And then Garrett Gordy would get away and then right away he'd just grab him by the throat again and start choking him. It went off for something like it. And for a while I was like, yeah, this is like the same thing. And then it went on so long that by the end it was just like awesome.
And what was the finish here? Andre eliminated himself. I can't remember.
Yeah, first he eliminated Wild Bill. And Wild Bill took an awesome bump out of the ring. He was bumping like a madman in this fucking match. And then he got rid of King Kong Bundy. Oh, wait. Yeah, he got rid of...
Yeah.
No, he did get rid of King Kong Bundy. Michael Hayes came back, or Michael Hayes was there and was kind of talking shit or... instigate. So Andre gets a Mil Máscaras from the World Rumble here in San Antonio where he went over the top rope himself.
That's right.
Chase Hayes, and when he came back, David Mann is like, no, you went over the top rope.
Right.
So he eliminated himself.
And his excuse, he was unfamiliar with American rules despite probably wrestling as much in America as he makes a comeback in his career.
Well, they should have had a French interpreter there.
So then it came down to Gordy and Bundy, and then Gordy wins, you know, and, you know, to keep the Freebirds strong and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it's weird. Some people might not like it, but I was entertained by it.
As Battle Royals go, it was a Battle Royal. I'm not a huge fan of Battle Royals unless it's the Royal Rumble. And Battle Royals are, well, they are what they are. So there was nothing wrong with this. So main event, maybe
this was
not.
When, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say main event. I don't know about that, but there was nothing wrong with the match. The show was fun, and still can't get over Al the Drill. Is that right? Madrid. Yeah, I just. Still blown away how over this guy was.
This was still when Andre, he was still in his big, like, traveling attraction thing at this point. Because he'd be in the AWA one week. He'd be in Madison Square Garden the next week, you know. Be in Florida or someplace like that. Like, every week he was, like, he could write it on a ticket and go anywhere he wanted to.
And he could get away with the main event like they had just because he was in it and he just made it special.
Yeah, Andre back then, Andre being on the card means he's going to sell out if it wasn't selling out before, you know. So
There's
it'd be like maybe a year later or a little later, Andre came back and he was teaming with the Iceman, King Parsons. And I just remember they kind of like did this post-match celebration after the match. And like Andre kind of got on like one knee. And he told, like, the Iceman to put his boot on his, like, knee that's up. And Andre kind of starts, like, shining the Iceman's boots, right? It was like a towel. So then, like, when he finishes, the Ice Man gets down on one knee, and he's like, you know, hey, let me return the favor. So Andre put his fucking foot on Iceman's knee, and Iceman started selling, and like Andre was breaking his leg. It was fucking one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Awesome. I remember Iceman King Parker. I remember the classic Iceman skit where he was like, his name came from like he delivered ice, and he was where he was getting the ice, and that's where he practiced his hip, his like a foot bump, which is his finisher.
Yeah.
On the ice, and he'd break the ice with his hip. It was weird.
Well, what people don't know is, like, a lot of times they would deliver ice to places in these ice blocks that were about, like, a foot high, foot wide. And you'd have to use these, like, not a hook, but like two hooks that kind of converge on the ice.
Yeah.
And you throw it over your shoulder and carry it. So he's doing that. And then they got this, like I don't want to say a pyramid, but you know what I mean? Kind of like that. Like a structure they built with all these cubes of ice, and then the Iceman just comes running with his thing was like gold dust, or Naomi who uses the butt bump or whatever, and he was the first person to really make that famous, and he came flying with his ass and he took out all the ice.
Also, he is a former America's Tag Team Champion with the Great Rock and Roll Buck Zumoff, who's been on the show, put by Craig.
Let's not talk about this any longer, okay? Let's let this die, okay? Sweep it under the rug. Yes, I booked Buck Zumoff for this show many a moon ago. Let's not bring it back up again.
I knew someone was up with that guy when I heard him on the show. I knew someone
was up. It wasn't a bad interview. I mean,
He's a whack guy.
He wasn't a bad interview. He's just a really bad man.
Yeah.
We didn't know.
That whole situation, I won't get too into it, but if this was just happening when his daughter was a minor, I would totally blame it all on him. They had a relationship that she was 27 or 28. She was a willing participant
for years because
she got upset. It's just so creepy and weird.
I'm not going to so much blame her, but it is strange.
Well, yeah, I'm not blaming her. It's weird. It's like one of the weirdest things I've ever heard.
Okay. You know the stories about the guy from the Mamas and the Papas. The old band, he was sleeping with his daughter well into her 30s.
Who was his daughter? Was that the girl from
Celebrity Rehab? I can't remember her name right now.
She was one night. Well, what the fuck was the name of that TV show? Was
I know exactly. Stanley
the Handyman. Was Valerie Bertinelli in the show? Was her sister?
One day at a time. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, once
so you're thinking of Mackenzie Phillips.
Thank you, Mackenzie Phillips.
She had all those drug problems when she was younger. I remember that.
Yes. Okay. So this basically the same story with Buck and his daughter and Mackenzie Phillips and the guy from the Mamas and the Papas. Once you start screwing with a young person's head. And they're absolutely wired that way. When they get into adulthood, they just don't know any better because you're a monster and you screwed with somebody's head from the time that they were small.
You think it's normal because you've been growing up as a child. It's like here in the South, you know, you hear like when you're really young and you hear like people being racist, you know, saying things about blacks, which you hear all the time. And you think it's normal way to act. I'm not saying it's the right way to act, but when you're a young child, you're really impressionable, so you think it's just normal.
Yeah.
It's like it's not a big deal to talk like that.
Craig's making a very good point here, but it's just weird, and then it just the ending of it is just classic. You know, he gets found guilty, and he tries to run.
That's awesome. Only time I wish they would have had court cameras on the courtroom and caught that.
Oh.
That was a...
Yeah,
and he's an old man. I mean, he's like what 60? So he's probably never
going
to see sunlight again.
Yeah,
he his mugshot, I swear he had one foot in the grave during the picture.
I thought he drank out of the wrong Grail cup. I was waiting for that knight to show up and say he chose poorly or something, you know, from Indiana Jones.
But I will say that when him and the Iceman were a tag team, I was a big fan. They used to wrestle the Super Destroyers and the PYTs, and you know, I enjoyed them back in the day, but you know, now it's like you can never look at them or think about them the same again.
Well, let's not talk about them anymore.
We can all sleep safe at night now, knowing that how other convicts think about the child rapists in prison. So he's gonna have fun.
Anyway,
Yeah,
we only got 10 minutes left.
Yeah, sir. Let's wrap it up.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think we were talking. We talked so long about two episodes.
Did anybody watch that ECW I told you about?
And yeah, let's do that next
week. Yeah, it's probably good. We didn't. Actually, we got Fritz next week, but I guess we could talk about it a little bit. But I never got a hold of watching it, which is good because we spent all the time talking about the two world class ones anyway.
There was more promos than anything else. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. But
JT is still alive after that dive by Mike Awesome. And he looked like it broke him in half.
Yeah, we'll talk about it soon. This might be a new thing that we do often, so.
Yeah.
Who the fuck is Maddie in the house character? That dude was weird. He looked like something from Faith No More.
Right.
Who?
Maddie in the house. Some interview.
And just watch it. You'll be amazed at this man.
They added two new episodes. They got a lot of episodes of ECW. I'm gonna go back and watch all these because he's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I want to watch the stuff Vinny was talking about when it was Eastern Championship because I've never seen any of that.
That's what this is.
Here.
Oh, okay.
It's 93-94.
Mm-hmm.
So. And pretty soon they're going to get to the changeover when they, you know, they did the screw job to the NWA title.
Yeah, that's what this episode is. It's all the build from the night the line was crossed. So.
Oh, okay.
Or no, that's a little bit later. I'm sorry. But not much.
Well, I took all these notes to talk about it this week.
Well, we'll get to it. I got stuff to do. Let's go.
Well, how do I save my notes?
What?
I'm kidding.
Let me go ahead and drop the plugs real quick. Everyone, check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at AngryMarks.com, along with a lot of other shows. I guess all the shows are doing well. Stevie was very happy on Facebook earlier today. So everyone, check out AngryMarks.com. You can also download and stream our show at BlogTalkRadio.com/Contrere. And you can hear older shows at blogtalkradio.com/Edward-Laredo. You can follow me at Facebook at Edward Laredo or at Ed in San Antonio. You can follow me at Twitter at Ed in San Antonio. And if you're going to WrestleMania, please check out our F4W/Wrestling Observer WrestleMania 30 meetup page and info. And you'll get all the stuff. Rodney has finally calmed down and stopped worrying because everyone has finally paid up for the brunch, luckily. And Rodney was very worried about that.
Yep.
I don't know if Rodney's ever going to be in charge of any events by himself. I mean, he almost gave himself an ulcer.
You can check me out on Twitter, and I am at Proper Jam. That's PROPERJM, my last name, and the word jam at the end. That's me on Twitter. And, of course, I am on every Tuesday, if there's no pay-per-view, with Brian and Vinny on F4W Live. And I'll be back on Tuesday to review SmackDown and Raw, and I'm not looking forward to doing SmackDown.
When you were going to be on the show the other day, some guy was like, yeah, I bet Ed's upset about it. And then I commented, why would I be upset when Craig gets to plug our show? And then the guy responded, because he never does. So, Craig, you need to start being a little slicker about getting plugs. Like, they're going to have the network on, and at some point they're going to say something about the network, and Craig, you can go like, have you guys seen the World Class? We just talked about World Class on Over the Top Radio, and it was awesome.
Ed, I'm well aware of how to do this.
All right.
Trust
me. Well, I know you want to do it slowly, but I'm expecting you to slowly pick it up.
I don't listen to the show, so I don't know if Craig is promoting them or not. I don't care.
Thank you.
You can go to
I'll talk to you guys next week.
Huh?
I said I'll talk to you guys next week. I'm out.
Okay, bye. So, but anyway, you can go to YouTube.com. YouTube.com
Facebook.
There.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I'll finish.
I was going to say, do you have the switchboard on?
I believe I do.
Do you see what I see on the very top? I just kind of noticed this. It says the DDoS attack has been bypassed and Block Talk Radio is now stable. Thanks for your patience while we work to resolve this.
What does that mean?
I have no freaking idea, but it's here on top of the. Like, you know, when the caller drops in the very top, it'll say, "Oh, caller
has
dropped."
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
I have no idea. I'm going to have to look back to the show and see how the production is. I hope. You remember how we had that month where the audio just went to shit? I hope that's not what's happening or happened.
Okay, I'm looking up DDoS attack.
By the way, I briefly mentioned earlier, next week we will be joined by Brian Fritz, and I'm pretty sure we'll be talking about all the stuff going up to Mania because Fritz is going to Mania with us, and we will, I guess, start talking about WrestleMania because I guess that's slowly going to take over the show since it's such a big deal.
I saw him on the NXT special sitting next to John Cena.
Yeah, I'm sure the restraining order was delivered to Fritz in the morning.
That was weird. I just when I was watching that, hey, there's Brian Fritz next to John Cena in the crowd. It was random.
I know, and then there was like a really hot chick behind John Cena too. But
I think
Fritz
it was
Raquel Bell.
What? You know the chick from P-Name? I swear it was.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't get like I could tell she was hot, but it's not like I got like a super good look at her. But I was like, man, is that hot chick? But Brian Fritz, he's been on the show a few times, but Brian Fritz is like if you know him in real life and hang out with him in real life, he's the guy who just keeps everyone entertained because he's got like a million stories. So I'm sure he either kept seeming entertained or he totally creeped them out.
Okay, this DDoS thing is some kind of a denial of service attack or something like that. I don't know what that means. Hopefully the show recorded some.
Well, it says it's now stable, so I guess we'll find out in a little bit here after the show's done. So do you have any last things you want to talk about before we go?
I think I'm going to give me a Roku box for the WWE Network. This Xbox stuff is a shit.
Yeah, luckily I've been watching on my laptop.
They don't have any of the ECW or WCW pay-per-views on this Xbox app.
Really?
Xbox app. Yeah, and they have no search feature. And so I think Rokus are relatively like cheap, like maybe around $100 or something.
So I think they're like $30.
Oh, really?
Like
I just owned Amazon, and they were like $100 or something.
Oh, wow.
But
I guess
I've heard that the network performs good on them, so I think I'm going to just invest in one of those.
So. Yeah, I think I'll be getting one of those pretty soon. My screen's a decent size, but it's an older TV, so
yeah.
I had to find out the Roku box, you know, because it's probably still got like the, you know, the cable cord plugged in. I'd probably have to find out if your local box can hook up to one of those TVs.
And I don't want to watch. I can't watch stuff I'm more comfortable watching stuff on TV. I ain't watching on the computer or on my Kindle, even though I can. But I'm one of those people. I have to watch it on the TV, you know. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't had to. I mean, it's gone out here and there on every once in a while, but never really had any problems with any of the live stream. Every once in a while, it'll get slow a little bit, but then I just refresh it and it'll be fine.
The only thing I've had is on demand, like when I start a show, right after it starts, it'll buffer again for like 5 or 10 seconds. That's the most
I've had. You know how like before every show there's the WWE symbol thing real quick? You notice
the
that
rating
never
thing?
Buffers or yeah, like it just says like WWE and then the rating or whatever.
Yeah, I noticed that.
You notice that never buffers or messes up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the buffering just seems to take a long time sometimes, so.
Like if you're jumping around, it's not like Netflix, they usually start real quick. But if you're jumping around, it'll buffer for a few seconds. But
well,
I mean,
plus the Roku has a resume feature on it for the network, so.
Oh, that's awesome. Then I really want
where you can
to get
just
it because it's like,
pick up where you left off.
Just like Netflix?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's cool. I'll probably get one here pretty soon. I can't say I've been watching a lot of it, the network, but everything I've been watching, I've enjoyed.
Hey, I'm looking at in the vault on the Legends of Wrestling. They got the round table on Texas Wrestling with Dusty Rhodes.
They got new ones.
Dusty Rhodes, Bill Watts, Jim Ross, and Michael Hayes. Doing a roundtable in Texas wrestling, so.
Oh well, I gotta check that. I'll probably be watching that next.
Yeah, you might want to check that out. They also got the factions on Legends of Wrestling. The worst character is pretty cool, where they bury a bunch of people. So.
Yeah, that was. I saw the worst characters. I saw the rebels or outlaws, and then there was one other one. The worst gimmick. The best part is the Shockmaster.
Yeah.
Dusty Rhodes made it all at Jim Crockett.
And even though Jim Crockett wasn't even around, man. Jim Crockett ain't been in the business for Christ knows how many, like 5 years.
He put that board that it worked fine before. But yeah, I'll definitely check. Those round tables are awesome. I mean they're really good.
Yeah.
And I guess we'll go ahead and wrap the show up. So we'll be back next week with Brian Fritz. So everybody come back then, and we will talk to you then.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the Matrix shit. Let's go hook him up.
I want to dog you until I wear your Texas ass out.
The game is ours to play.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.